The views and opinions of this podcast are solely those of the creators and do not reflect any streaming service or platform. This podcast contains strong language and contrarian viewpoints that may be objectional to some listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Three Geeks in a Microphone podcast. I'm Dean.
I'm Art.
I'm Russ.
And today we're going to be discussing the 1980 film Hollywood Nights. So, you know, truthfully, guys, I had never heard of this film until you guys brought it up. How did you guys first come across this gem?
I saw it as a teenager, which is like the worst possible time to see it.
It was one of those movies that I saw as a kid. And then one day, I used to belong to the Columbia House Movie Club, and it was one of my free selections. I'm like, oh, wow, I remember this movie, and I bought it on VHS, and I watched it several times, because probably out of sheer boredom, because looking back, watching it again for the first time after several years, I was like, okay, I like this that much.
Like I said, I had never seen it before. I drew, and truth be told, I've never seen American Graffiti before either, but I see a lot of parallels between the two. It's made in the 80s and almost a throwback to the way I looked at it. It's the movie is set in 1965. It's the first major role of Tony Danza, Robert Wall, and Michelle Pfeiffer.
In fact, Robert Wall actually hated this film. If you watch the end credits, his name's almost last in it because he didn't want any public knowledge or anything publicly known that he was attached to this.
Really?
Which is crazy because his face is all over it.
Right. He's the main guy.
Right.
But see, it takes place in, it's set in 1965, but when you watch it, I get the feeling of like, how can I describe this? Almost because the Vietnam War hadn't started yet. And it's almost like you're seeing the death of the 50s, the birth and startup of the 60s, even though it's set mid-decade. Did you guys get that at all? Or because you see a lot of 50s throwbacks.
Yeah, and that's something I've noticed that up until the Vietnam War, because my parents grew up, they got married in 1960. So I would look at photo albums and stuff of real life, and it was kind of like that the 50s, even though it ended in 1960, it continued until about 64, when the Beatles and all that, then it was like a culture change, and then it got more into like the 60s that everyone is aware of, like peace, love, hippie, 65 after the war. So pre-war, it does make sense that it would feel more like the end of the 50s.
I definitely see what you mean. I mean, I have a theory, I guess, that it takes a couple years for a decade to kind of find its own voice.
Yeah,
like
definitely.
If you go back and watch, for example, the original Friday the 13th that came out in 1980, all of the hairstyles and the clothing,
very 70s.
It screams late 70s. But yeah. Then you move forward to like, say part four, you're clearly planted in the 80s.
Yeah, definitely.
So it takes about three to four years for a decade to kind of find its voice. And this kind of comes through here where it's in the mid 60s, but it's heavily influenced by the 50s. I mean,
go ahead.
No,
I was gonna say, in fact, with Hollywood Nights, I actually had a lot of 1970s, late 70s vibe, even though it's taking place in the 60s. Just certain things and just different ways that, I don't know, it just kind of felt more like subliminal. Because it was still the time period that was made. It definitely had like, certain hairstyles even once in a while. It just seemed not 60s here and there in the movie.
Oh, definitely. I mean, like Michelle Pfeiffer's hair. When you first see her in that little getup, because she's working at Tubby's as a waitress or what do they call it, car hops?
Yeah.
She could be a late 70s pinup girl in that outfit.
Yeah.
She totally had the Farrah Fawcett hair going.
Yeah. Well, how can you go wrong with a movie that shows boobs in the first 2 minutes?
The movie was pretty much pure debauchery.
Oh, it is.
In fact, I was laughing because I had just watched American Graffiti the other night for the first time. I'd seen bits and pieces of it, but I knew that we were going to do this. And I'm like, I want to watch it just so I can see how much alike they are. And this Hollywood Nights is like if J.J. Abrams tried to do America Graffiti. It's like a carbon copy poorly done.
Damn. Now, truth be told, like I said, I have never seen American Graffiti all the way through. I've seen chunks of it here and there, but I've never seen it all the way through. So this kind of reminded me of like a car flick meets Porky's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It so, really
like had I that said, Porky's J.J. vibe. Abrams.
So, without the lens flares.
Without the lens flares. To kind of give a base synopsis of the movie, we have the Hollywood Knights. They're a classic car club. I'm assuming they've probably been around since the 50s, I would guess.
Yeah, because they kind of make statements about like the older brothers and uncles and fathers having all been knights.
Right. They were all members, and now their kids and nephews are trying to join. It's the last night of Tubby's, what is it?
The drive-in.
Yeah, Tubby's drive-in is being torn down the next day. And this is like the main hangout for the knights. So they decide to ham it up for the last night. And the first thing they do is take four pledges that want to join. And they strip them nude, give them four tires, and they have to go in the Watts neighborhood to a radio station and do a dedication to Tubby's at exactly 2 a.m. But the only way you can do this is if you have to go into the building itself to do the dedication. You can't just call in. One of the subplots is these four guys going through Watts late at night in the nude trying to get this dedication ceremony. And then, was it Newbomb Turk?
Yeah.
Is Robert Wall. Robert Wall, yeah, that's right. He seems to be the leader of the knights at this point. And
I wouldn't say the leader of this small group, because you go back when you look at like Tony Danza's character and these other guys, and the one guy who supposedly is going off to Vietnam, but you barely see him in the entire movie. You're supposed to care about him, but yet you're like, well, bye. They seem more like the patriarchs.
Like the senior group.
Yep, the more senior members. Yep. The guy that was going off to Vietnam, I know I've seen him before, and I forgot to look him up. Does anyone know who he is? Because I know I've seen him in other stuff before.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's,
go ahead, Russ.
Yeah, he's a face.
Gary Graham. So, sorry.
No, I was like, he just looks like someone. I can't think of what I've seen him in.
Yeah. Well, he was in Robot Jocks. He was in Star Trek Enterprise. He was an ambassador.
Okay.
He's been in tons and tons of stuff.
I think it's the Star Trek that you're like, talking about.
He's like a character actor, right? You don't. He pops up everywhere, but he's the guy. I know that dude, but you never know his name.
Right.
So some of the main plots, like I said, you have Robert Wall. He's just into basic fuckery. He likes throwing practical jokes. You have the second plot with Tony Danza is dating Michelle Pfeiffer. She wants to be an aspiring actress. He's kind of afraid that if she gets famous, he won't want anything to do with her. And then the third plot is the older brother who's leaving for Vietnam. The three of these plots kind of interweave through the whole movie. Is it me or it doesn't have a true coherent plot?
I don't think it was intended to.
It's almost like a day in the life of this club.
Well, yeah.
I was going to say, that's the way American Graffiti was also. It's just one night that these people are just hanging out and doing what they normally do. And that's what this, I guess, is supposed to be like, too, is just a momentary glimpse into the life of the Hollywood Knights.
I mean, it's an entertaining movie, and I will say this. Let's face it. The stars of this movie are the cars. There are some gorgeous cars in this movie. In fact, I have a list here of every car that was featured in this movie. One of the things I noticed while researching this, the 57 Chevy that with the blower that Tony Danza has, Hot Rod's Project X car for that year, or the year before, I believe, and they rented it to use in the film. Did you see the scene where he's racing they're cruising and they meet the two guys in the Cobra, the Mustang Cobra, and they race each other where he gets pulled over? You know what I'm talking
about? Yeah.
If you look closely, you'll see black smoke coming out of the tailpipe and part of the hood. Well, there is no hood of the 57 Chevy when they're racing. They actually damaged the transmission during that scene. They fucked up the transmission of this hot rod, and it put production, it halted production for almost 2 weeks while they had to fix it.
Out.
And I guess they, at the time, the people from Hot Rod Magazine were like this close to pulling their support for the movie because they damaged the car, but the production paid for the repairs to kind of smooth things over.
Yeah, I wonder if it was because they hired someone that didn't know how to, like, actually drive that kind of car.
I thought it was
an automatic.
That I could see, but from what I understand, I guess Tony Danza actually did drive that car.
Oh, well, that might explain.
That answers what happened to the car.
But like, it was a really entertaining movie. I mean, when they introduced Bozo the Cop as, and I swear to God, this is the guy's name. When the two cops are talking to their superior about how much of a screw up they are, he actually calls him Bozo. I'm assuming that's his name through the whole movie, right? Bozo?
No, it's actually Bimbo, I think. Or,
Bimbo,
hold on.
That's it. Not Bozo. Bimbo. That's right. I got it here in my notes. But these two cops are absolute idiots. And they're dicks. The kid riding the skateboard, they throw him off, and they find cigarettes on him. They hang out up there just as much as the rest of them do. I mean, they eat up there twice.
Well, the interesting thing is that Officer Bimbo, most people our age will recognize him anyway because he was in a bunch of the Ernest movies.
Yep.
He was Chuck.
Now, who's his partner? I swear to God, I've seen him before. I just don't know where. I can't think of where I've seen him. I've seen him in like one or two other things.
He was a director of Mortal Kombat. He was Dr. Slotkin in Spaceballs.
That's where I've seen him. Okay.
Yeah, he was in a few Mel Brooks movies. Like History of the World Part 1.
Who was he in History of the World? Was he
one of the disciples.
Oh, okay. Okay.
He was in School for Scoundrels.
The other big thing in this movie is the pranks. I mean, the first thing we do is there's the dance they have to go to.
Oh, the punch?
Yeah, they essentially kidnap the honor student that has to do a magic trick, who he was in, not You Can't Do That on Television.
It's Stuart Pankin. He played, he was Dudley, but.
Dudley. I think Dudley's the real star of the movie.
Yes, so do I.
Yeah, he was in Congo. He was in Not Necessarily the News.
That's it.
Fatal Attraction, Arachnophobia.
They essentially kidnap him, and Robert Wall goes in and decides to fart a song.
Yeah, he farted the song Volare.
Volare. They hightail it out before the Keystone cops show up, and they arrest they arrest the honor student. They get in trouble for that. Then later is the dance. So they get up to the dance, and the two caterers, they're bringing in the punch. And they decide to take it, and they all piss in the punch and then bring it in.
And even before that, though, when they take the punch from the caterers, they tell the caterers to drive through the flower garden.
Yes.
because it's all getting knocked down anyway, and it's faster to get out that way because they're gonna build the new bomb Turk library.
Right. And they're running to, I know new bomb Turk. I know that guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't he rich? Isn't he famous or something?
Right.
Yeah, they're sitting in the catering truck drinking beers. It's kind of funny how that whole thing plays out.
Right. Yeah. And while they're sitting there, who's the gal? She's on the committee that wanted to shut down Tubby's. I can't think of her name. Her and I guess it's like her neighbor. They're banging in the back seats of cars more than teenagers are through this whole movie.
Yeah. And then every time is Dudley showing up. Hello, hello,
right.
Hi.
He screws it up.
Just go away, Dudley.
And when they bring in the punch, they're all, well, first of all, the one kid who's caught smoking, he's telling everyone, don't drink the punch. Don't drink the punch. They got two glasses and they're, boy, there's something in here. Yeah, I've tasted this before. It's spiked. I've definitely tasted this before. So what does that mean? She's into water sports?
Or she's had a lot of dick in her mouth.
I think that's what they were referring to. And I didn't catch that when I used to watch it all the time as, you know, I just out of sheer boredom, but watching it again, I'm like, oh, that makes more sense now.
Right. And you're right. Every time, and you notice they're in different cars every time they're trying to screw in the back seat. The first time they're in his car, it's got this huge back seat. And then the second time where they're next to the trampoline, she even says, I like your Buick better. It has more room.
Yeah.
And they're even going at it on the trampoline. I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah. Well, what's interesting, though, is if you watch that scene, both of them are wearing underwear, and you're like, where the fuck is he hitting her at?
Right. And you're right. Dudley comes up with no glasses.
Look, we're all naked.
He slams into the door. And in fact, earlier, Newbaum was friends with that surfer guy, and he's got the two hot blondes with him. And that's how they distract Dudley, by the blonde shows him her tits, and he starts having an asthma attack. They steal his glasses, and now he's wandering around, and he stumbles upon his neighbor trying to get laid in the backseat of a car. What in the hell?
Is it his neighbor? It's like the school teacher, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Is she a teacher or...
Yeah, she's like a teacher because he was asking her about something about school, I think, if I remember right.
Right, yeah. And her husband was at the pep rally. Her husband's one of the the local news anchors.
He's the weatherman.
Yeah.
Towards the end, when they finally all get caught, or she and the other guy or whatever, and the husband's coming out, I was just like, oh, where's Dudley?
Well, yeah. The cop car smashes into the car they're in.
Yeah.
And it's the strangest thing just happened. My clothes fell off during the impact. Yeah. I'm like, really?
That's what I was trying to – I had a brain fart, and I was trying to think, what was it that I was going where with that? And that's what I was going. And my clothes fell – yeah.
Knocked our clothes off.
And the other thing I want to know is, how many times did the two cops get nailed with eggs out of nowhere? Did you guys notice
very,
that?
Very beginning, when Newbaum's taking pictures of Fran Drescher and the other girls, they got nailed like four or five times. And then it kind of progressed after that. Like every time they had Newbaum either on the ground or dead to rights, they, like out of nowhere, they were getting hit by eggs.
Or when Newbaum has, what is it, a piece of pie? And he whips it at his friend, and his friend ducks, and it slams into the cop. And, of course, the crowning achievement when Newbaum can't take it anymore. So he tells his buddy to go clog the toilet in Tubby's, and the cop goes in for his nightly shit. They screw with the door handle so he can't get out, and now it's flooding everywhere, and they pile garbage in front of the door. Oh, that was classic. That's a pure 50s prank right there.
Yeah, that was, and I kept thinking, well, you know, you can stop the toilet from running. Turn the water off. But he's like, but then again, look who it is. It's Officer Dingleberry.
And of course, his partner has no idea what's going on. He spills his milkshake all over himself in the car. And
well, didn't he like shoot the door open, start firing at
him? Yes, he's blowing holes through the door, which causes
one of those have got to hit the guy.
It's such a small room. I mean, he starts screaming, "Why the hell are you shooting? Stop!" But
they should have at least had a mild flesh wound just for, you know.
And what is up with his partner's obsession with a mustache?
Oh. I kept watching that. It reminded me when I was like in junior high thinking, I wonder what I'd look like with a mustache.
I mean, he even goes so far as
he drew it on him.
Right. He takes the Sharpie and he's drawing it on his face. I'm like, what the fuck?
And it's not even a good mustache. It's like, come on, it's a little pencil thing. Come on, at least color it in real good.
Now, I'm actually kind of out of order here. This movie jumps around. It's kind of hard to follow. I mean, there's the whole scene where the, who is it, Art? It's Fran Drescher and, the two other chicks that they were taking pictures of. They pull up to this secluded spot where they want to change their clothes. And you got Newbaum and the rest of the guys in the tree.
Yeah.
Watching them change.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of the interesting thing about the whole movie is like was Newbaum fucking clairvoyant? Like, how the fuck did he know? Like, how did he have preemptive knowledge to, like, at the end of the movie, you realize the whole time the cops were in the house while they were having the meeting, the adults were having the meeting about closing Tubby's and putting in the new office complex. Newbaum recorded the cops because he plays it later across their CB radios.
Oh, you're right. Yep. I forgot about that.
So he knew to be at the pool at Fran's house to take pictures of Fran and the girls. And then not only did he know that, but he knew to be there when they changed at that random ass park. He knew to be in that tree, that specific tree. And then later on, he knew, I mean, his timing was impeccable.
Right. And you also notice when they show the front of that house where they're having the meeting, they egg and TP the whole house.
Right.
How did they know they were going to be there?
Well, I'm guessing that was actually a meeting for like their, the Beverly Hills.
What was it?
Like association.
Right.
Like an a neighborhood association meeting. So that was probably advertised.
Okay.
But for most everything else, like he had to have been damn clairvoyant to know to be at specific places. Like how did he know when the Icebox Twins were in the shitter singing and bad mouthing people? How did he know to be in the stall to record it?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. Oh, go ahead.
No. At no point did they say anything like he had a friend of a friend that was giving him this information. So how did he know?
Now, you guys have seen Invasion USA, right?
Oh, yes.
Chuck Norris and the terrorist, he just knew. It's just a gift.
It's a gift.
Has the Norris gift. He just knows.
So are they related? Are these two movies connected?
They could be.
Interesting fan theory. I hadn't thought of that.
Is Newbaum Norris's father?
I'm not sure Norris had a father.
I think it might be connected with twins, too. I think what happened, it was some kind of genetic, you know, you had Chuck Norris, and then the leftover shit was Newbaum.
Oh.
That actually makes sense. Kind
of like Danny DeVito. So he's got a little bit of this gifting and everything that he knows, just knows. But, yeah.
Now, I will say that I do like the storyline with the older brother going to Vietnam. Especially when you're, like, the part where they give him that, they get together and they give him that gorgeous car. That yellow, I'm not sure what it is. Anyone know? I have, like I said, I have a list of every car used in the movie, but I don't know exactly what that car is.
It's pure custom, I believe.
Well, it's definitely from the 40s. It's a 40s model car. It's a Ford?
Yeah, I don't remember what it was.
It'd probably be like a 36 Ford. I'm trying to picture it in my head. It's, like I said, I didn't watch the movie within the last week. I should have, but
well, as far as Fords go, they list a 1928 Model A. That's not it. A 1930 Model A, a 1934 V8 Coupe.
That might be it.
Yeah.
They show a 1940 V8 and then a 1946 Super Deluxe Sedan Coupe. I think you're right. I think it's the 34 Coupe, because that is a gorgeous car. But I like the when they give it to him and whatnot. They put the 8-track player in it, and I love the conversation he has with what's his name, Shifty, the guy who owns the garage.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I like Smitty. The whole idea.
Smitty, that's it. How he talks about, you know, when he was in World War II, his buddy, they dropped a huge engine into a Jeep during one of Patton's parades, but then later how his friend died driving his car accidentally into an ammo dump and it blew him all to hell. And then he says something interesting. He's like, but you're not gonna get that in Vietnam. You're just going over there as an advisory role. And then later he says, you know, war is really weird. And this is true. You're going to experience shit that you don't want. I like how they kind of link the two together. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it does kind of get dark for a second.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you got to remember 1965. They really didn't know nobody really knew what we were getting into.
Right.
Yeah. That's the thing with that whole character. I would have loved to have seen more about him. I would have loved his stuff going on that night with him. And the nervousness of, but it was such kind of, instead we're seeing all these other people that, you know, Dudley, where you care about the character, but I wanted to care more about him because he actually had an interesting plot going on with his life where everyone else is like,
well, yeah. And they kind of leave you with a feeling like, yeah, he isn't coming back.
I got that feeling too. And the whole thing, because he even says towards the end there, when he's talking to Tony Danza and Smitty, how he wants if something happens to me, he wants the car donated to the club so everyone can use it. And I think you're right. I think he does die. They never go into it. It's like I said, it's just this one night.
But yeah, they totally leave you with that feeling like, yeah, he's not coming back.
Yeah, it's almost like foreshadowing that he does die in Vietnam.
It almost makes you wonder if they were going to do a sequel.
Hmm.
And like that might have been like the plot line
now,
or one of the side plots.
Now, that's one thing. If Art, have you seen American Graffiti?
Yeah. It's been a while, but I've seen it.
At the end of American Graffiti, even though it's not war connected, one of the big characters is the guy who drag races. And I was feeling kind of like what they were kind of like they're taking that character and putting it in with this older brother is going to go off to Vietnam, even though they didn't have as much information about him but the drag racer or John. Oh, I can't think of what they call him in American Graffiti. But at the end of the movie, it informs you that the drag racer was killed by a drunk driver just a couple years after that night. And it kind of, that's where, after watching American Graffiti and then watching Hollywood Nights, that's kind of what I think they were trying to make that character's, you know, that sadness of, oh, we watched him, we loved him, and now we know he's gone. But at the same time, they left it open and they left, they didn't put enough information with him to have the same impact as the drag racer from American Graffiti. If you know what I mean.
Right. And it's almost like, again, I bring it up. It's almost like you're seeing the death of the innocence of the 50s or perceived innocence of the 50s it's transitioning into the turbulence of the mid-60s.
Yeah.
It's almost like a transitional film between time periods seen through the eyes of a car club. Because at one point is the two of the members, I don't remember their names, they're just cruising. And one says to the other, he says, you know, no, the nights aren't breaking up. He's just, they're going to Vietnam. You know, but no, we're still going to be here. You can cruise with me. So even inside the club itself, they're thinking this is all over because one of their senior guys is going to Vietnam.
And the place is also that they hang out is closing. So there's massive change.
Right. It's like the end of an era. Bringing in the brother into Vietnam is the starting of a new one. Back up for a minute. As the four guys are wandering through Watts trying to get... They're hiding in the... By the way, this movie takes place on Halloween night. So they're hiding in the bushes of this couple's house, and the dude's banging his wife in the house, and they're naked, so they're trying to find clothes. And the two guys, here, have some bed sheets. No. He looks out the window and sees a guy in bed sheets. I'm going to go get my damn shotgun. Look like Klan members running around. Why would you do that? Or when they meet up with the doo-wop group singing on the corner, and they hand him a joint for the first time. Oh yeah, we smoke that shit all the time. Uh huh.
Well, you know what's funny about the doo-wop group is you notice that one of the singers was Punky's teacher.
Oh shit, you're right. I didn't even know. Now that you mention it, damn.
The guy he was wearing a black polo shirt. Give me a second here. His name was T.K. Carter. He was her teacher, Mike.
Okay. I knew I had seen him before. I couldn't place him, though.
So here we're watching a movie that takes place in 1965, and we've got Punky's teacher getting stoned while he's singing.
Right. Now there is the elephant in the room here.
Well, there's a few of them with this movie, but go ahead.
True. Michelle Pfeiffer was hot as hell in this movie.
Yes, she was.
I think she looks way better than she did, two, 3 years later in Scarface. In Scarface, she looked almost emaciated, I guess. She was really, really thin. And here she actually had some meat on her bones.
I think she was supposed to look like that, though, in Scarface. I mean, like, you know, Coke had really gotten into her and wrecked her body.
Yeah, that's true. But in Tony Danza, I mean, does this man ever age? He looks the same as he did,
I know,
you know, 30-some years ago, but the only thing missing was he didn't have a mullet in this movie.
What cracks me up is, like, he looks like he's 40. He's looked like he's 40 his entire life. He's going to die 130, and he's going to look 40.
Right. In fact, the last I heard, isn't he, like, an English teacher now?
Yeah.
Like a high school or something? How cool is that? You have Tony Danza as your English teacher.
Well, yeah, or you could go to Ohio and the kid from Hook can be your history teacher.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's useless knowledge.
What went from Hook? The little boy, Jack?
Yeah. He was also in Dick Tracy.
Okay. See, I would have loved it. If it was Rufio, I'd be like, yeah. But, you know, Jack.
I think he's actually dead in real life.
Rufio?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it was him.
Oh, great. Now I want to look that up.
Now, overall, what was, like I said, this is the first time I had seen this movie. My overall impression, I liked it. It's a fun movie. It's a popcorn flick. But if you dig down deep, like we were discussing, there's some heavy themes in here. But overall, it's a pretty lighthearted movie. I'd watch it again. I mean, I've seen it 2-3 times now. Again, though, the cars are the star, especially when they bring in the three Porsches. Like the one guy even says, this is the same type of car James Dean was driving.
Or yeah, you notice his comment about it. Yeah, they take corners great.
Right. And what is up with the two Asian dudes flying around in the Cobra? Anytime they race, they're always racing the same two guys. The other thing I noticed in the race scenes when they're flying down the two-lane highway, you can tell based on the buildings around. Now, they did a good job putting period cars you know, parked on streets and whatnot. But the buildings, and it's definitely not the 60s.
Yeah.
Especially,
you know, that might be what I was talking about, the vibe. It might be the subliminal vibe that I was picking up, that it wasn't the 60s, but it felt more like the late 70s.
I mean, they showed a, what was it? It's the orange circle with the 76.
It's a, that was actually the 76 gas station.
Yeah, they you actually see one in the distance when they're racing. Of course, that wouldn't have existed in 65. Same thing with what is the Unico truck that drives by at one point. The logo is totally different from what you would have seen at that time period. Considering they took as much time as they could to get the hot rods right, you would think they would do better set dressing, you know, or at least for close-up shots.
I'm kind of thinking that back in 1980, I don't think they were all that worried about it, in the sense that televisions didn't have that great a resolution back then. And
yeah,
this is true.
I think they just went on the assumption that nobody would probably notice. I think when you look back at a lot of shows and movies, like from anything prior to like even 2000. You know, they banked a lot on, you know, nobody's ever going to notice. It's like you watch like episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, you can actually see black gaffer's tape like on some of the consoles.
Really?
Yeah, like around some of the screens and stuff.
All in all, how would you guys rate this movie from a 1 to a 10? Like I said, 1, it absolutely sucks. 10 is the best movie ever made.
I'd give it a 5. Like I said, I used to watch it all the time when I got it on VHS, just because it was one of those put it in, do something, just background noise, and it was fun. It had funny moments, but given, it's definitely not good.
What about you, Art?
It's like one of those ones that's kind of it's definitely not a great movie. But in the sense that, you know, it's not like Lawrence of Arabia, but, you know, it's one of those. It, to me, it's a nostalgia movie because I had so much fun watching that movie as a teenager and then attempting to pull similar pranks.
If
Fran Drescher wasn't in it, I would straight up give it a 9.
You know,
because her voice is so grating.
Oh, and I knew I recognized her voice, and until you said that was Fran Drescher, I never put two and two together. I didn't realize it until you mentioned that.
In fact, there are very few things that shrivel my junk faster than her.
Sorry,
go ahead, Ross.
I was just gonna say her scene with Newbaum in the car and
yes.
His premature.
Yes.
I'm like, why would you even want to?
Well, come on. Let's face it. If you can take the voice out back, she was hot.
Oh, I didn't think so.
No?
I know.
See, I didn't realize it was her. And I'm like, okay, this chick's pretty hot. I recognize the voice. I just don't know from where. And I did not put two and two together and realize it was Fran Drescher. But yeah, that poor guy.
Yeah, actually, I mean, she's like, I'm trying to think of a nice way to put this so we don't end up getting hated by celebrities. But
go ahead and say it, dude. Just do it.
She's like the female. She's the female Treat Williams.
Damn.
But seriously, I can't give the movie, because of her being in it, I can't justify giving it any more than a 6.
Okay.
Despite how much fun it is to watch.
I can see that. Going from a fresh perspective, like I said, I had never seen this before. And now, I had heard of A Hollywood Nights from like the late 90s. It was a really lousy porno, which is what I thought that this was when you first brought it up. And then I'm like, oh, okay.
Then I said, I've seen it. And then you're like, what? There's something wrong here.
Yeah, this isn't the right Hollywood Nights. but I would give it at least a 6. Now, if I include the cars, a 6.5. Because let's face it, the cars in this movie are sweet as hell. I mean, how often do you see a souped up Ford Model T?
Right.
I mean, I had never seen that before. I've never, truth be told, I've never really been into hot rods much. I mean, back in the 80s, up here in Michigan, we have Milan Dragway. I think it's now closed, but at one point, my uncle was like a part owner, and we would go down on weekends when I was a kid sometimes and watch, like alcohol funny cars and whatnot. But I was never big into like street drag racing and stuff like that. So when I saw that, the ingenuity to soup up a Model T, that's really cool. I'd never seen that before.
Yeah, see, I've seen those my entire life because we have a car club in town, and then with my Torino, I go to car shows, so I see these guys with souped up cars all the time. So to me, I really like the cars in the movies, but at the same time, and the main one, the impressive one that was given to the Vietnam destined character, that was the one that was like, wow. Everything else is kind of nice, but
I wish we would have seen that car driving, because you notice it. They never take it anywhere. It's just sitting in the garage. They never drive. They start it up, but they never drive that car.
Now, didn't the one guy make a comment calling it like piss yellow?
Yeah.
Yes. In fact, he even screws up and he calls. He says Tony Danza's name.
No. Yeah. What he said was, Tony Danza actually makes a comment and asks if it's piss yellow.
Right.
But the guy that painted the car was actually a popular bodywork painter or car painter back in the 80s anyway. He says no, it's Tony Nancy, which Tony Nancy was the guy that actually played that character. If you watch, he's actually wearing one of the t-shirts from his own car shop.
Oh, okay.
No, it's Tony Nancy Yellow, and that was the guy's name. He actually kind of slipped out of character for a second and said, no, it's Tony Nancy Yellow.
Okay.
And that's when he said piss yellow. That's almost the exact same line that Harrison Ford says to the character in America Graffiti with his yellow hot rod. And I'm like, oh, yeah, definitely JJ. JJ. It's original, but
I mean, all in all, I didn't hate the movie. It was a fun movie, but yeah, we're not talking Casablanca here or high art. But yeah, I definitely would rate it a 6, 6.5.
Yeah, like I said, I gave it the 5 because I thought it was a fun movie, but it's definitely not Blue Thunder.
Anything else we want to touch on in this movie, guys? Or we good?
No, I definitely recommend people to watch it.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. It's worth a watch at least once through.
Did anybody else notice that Dudley, at the end of the film, when he calls his mom?
Okay. Yes.
Johnny Shine, the guy that was going off to Vietnam, gave him a jacket.
Yes.
And he puts it on. But when he calls his mom, did you notice the name on the jacket that he's wearing when he calls his mom?
No.
He's wearing Newbomb's jacket.
Oh, no shit.
Which is, it's kind of a weird gaffe. But yeah. When he's standing in the phone booth, and he tells his mom he's about to go off and get laid, he's actually wearing what you can see it says Newbomb on it.
I did not notice that.
I didn't pay attention to that either.
Yeah, I think there was something about they didn't have enough jackets to go around. So some of the guys were wearing other – they were just hoping nobody would notice the names were different or not changed.
It's probably because they had all those transmissions to fix. They had to cut back on the coat.
Well, from what I was reading, the only car that was actually damaged at all in this movie, other than, the ones that they purposely wrecked, were that one – Project X hot rod. And that was, let's face it, that was an accident. They didn't mean for the trans to blow. So yeah, I definitely would recommend this. If you've never seen it, at least see it once.
Yeah, it is, and it, again, it's also a movie that there is no way they could they would make this today.
No.
Oh yeah, there's there's a little political incorrectness going on here.
Well, there's a lot, but.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's a movie from the 80s that was mimicking the late 60s or mid 60s, so it makes sense, you know? It's just kind of how it was. It was
made about an era by people that actually lived then.
Right.
And remembered what it was actually like.
Very true. I mean, all in all, it's a good movie. So next up, guys, we're doing the, 86 movie, The Wraith, correct?
Yep.
Looks like we're doing a car theme for the next two. So, anything else to add, gentlemen?
I'm good.
All right. I'm good. Thank you, everyone, and we will catch you on the next one.